the Temple of Dendara, that's dedicated to Hathor. This is an amazing temple site. I've got a video on my YouTube channel that's pretty old now. I should probably re-upload it again because it's just really worth re-uploading. Going into the subterranean complex of the temple, and that's where you have the infamous light bulb image. Have you seen this before? It's quite a famous one of, like, what is this? You know, this, like, giant being, because it is a giant being. There's three smaller humans depicted next to him, kind of praying in veneration to him. And he's holding this giant, you know, bulb that looks like a light bulb, and there's, like, a lotus flower inside it. And it's symbolic but suggestive, very suggestive. Yes, and there's a lot of imagery in that whole subterranean chamber, sacred geometry, cymatics, gateways, and it's a very weird chamber. The whole site is strange. The Pyramid of Unas and some of these pyramid sites around there, very acoustically resonant. Like, once you get into them, my God, the acoustics are just insane. It's the level of the stone building that you just think, like, if it was hard for them to do, they wouldn't be doing it all the time at this scale. But you find it all over the world, and it shares very similar signatures, very similar engineering styles, very similar configurations, the geometries used, the type of temple sites, the structures, the materials, the alignments, a lot of alignments to the solstice, to the equinox, to geodetic lines, like telluric flows of electromagnetic energy in the planet. There's a lot of alignment in the henges and dolmens that we find from Stone Age cultures, Stone Age, all over the world. That's another psyop, in my opinion, is this concept of the Stone Age that we have, where it's just this very rudimentary, primal form of humanity. And yet it's at this point when apparently we were working with, you know, bone antler tools and sharpening a stick enough to make a spear. But at that time, we make Stonehenge and Newgrange and all these incredible multi-ton megalithic geometric Göbekli Tepe. So yeah, there's huge problems with the historical narrative, and that seems to echo around the world, not just in Egypt. There are focal points like Egypt, like Peru, like some other areas, Russia as well, which is very secretive, but there are some very strange megalithic sites out in Russia. It's just harder to get evidence of them. But in terms of what I think it represents, I do think that there's elements of a lost civilization that goes back to, you know, 12,800 pre-Younger Dryas, pre-cataclysmic floods going across the planet, and that we are seeing the remnants of that, and we're seeing the aftermath of the survivors who are picking up the pieces and rebuilding their society. So there's a lot of layers in Egypt that are clearly rising up from a blueprint. And the weird thing is, when you get down to the most ancient parts of Egypt, down to what looks like the blueprint, it's way more advanced than all of the stuff that comes after it. So it's like, okay, like, so they were working from a blueprint that actually is better than what they could even achieve. So there was a huge vacuum of knowledge that was clearly lost. And that, in my opinion, would be the cataclysmic destruction of whatever was going on this planet before our history began.
Was it telemetry?
It was, telluric currents, T-E-L-L-U-R-I-C, telluric. And it's like, it's the electromagnetic, it's like the fault lines in the earth where you've got cracks in the crust. Electromagnetic energy propagates through there stronger. So you've got these kind of like strong networks of electromagnetic energy that run through the planet. And it's just on these networks that you happen to get a concentration of henges and dolmens and these ancient kind of piezoelectric material constructed buildings and Stone Age projects. So it again, being aligned to the equinox, the solstice, these geodetic alignments to telluric flows, cosmic as above, so below, it definitely seems like there's an energetic component to this, especially because the materials themselves are very typically made out of very dense quartz rich stone, which is naturally electrically conductive, often coupled with limestone, which is an amplifier of acoustics. And then the sites themselves are often engineered in a geometry that actually propagates acoustics more profoundly. So you actually have a lot of these examples all over the world. Stonehenge is one. Newgrange in Ireland. I was recently in Malta, where I still need to release a documentary, but I've got to go back out there and film even more, where you have incredible temple sites and a very, very incredible acoustically tuned subterranean temple site made of limestone. What's important is that these materials actually are complementary towards each other. So if you have a multi-ton geometrically engineered stone structure that resonates acoustics very profoundly, and you make it out of this limestone material, if you're incorporating rose quartz granite or something high quartz content into that matrix as well, there's a geoenergetic coupling that will occur between the acoustic amplification that's coming from the limestone, because limestone helps propagate acoustics. The Romans, the Greeks, they knew this. They built colosseums and auditoriums out of limestone, because the back seats, you'd be able to hear someone on stage. It propagates through that stone very nicely. So the propagation of acoustics through the limestone, which then is an acoustic vibrational stimuli for the piezoelectric components of the rose quartz granite or the quartz rich stone that you're using. So there will be a natural electric conductivity occurring from that acoustic vibration. And so you've got all of these complementary engineering elements that would signify a form of science, a clear form of science that they understood. And then it taps into human consciousness when we find out that a lot of the acoustic engineering is set to bandwidths that will influence the human brain, change it from alpha to theta or delta, and, you know, shift the function and perception of human brainwave. And so there is a very deep acoustic consciousness aligned with the stars and the planet science package that's being put up and represented in these megalithic multi-ton stone building projects globally. You know, and that to me is a really strong signature. The Stone Age, again, the Neolithic Age, all over the world. This is a strong signature to me of a lost civilization. We've got the skeletal remnants of it in these massive megalithic stone projects from the Stone Age.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, when you look at the tenets of a group of people like the Templar or the Rosicrucians. They have this idea, like you were talking about before, about like as above, so below, as within, so without. And this idea of transcendence. And when I was talking to John Majerowski, he was talking about how like this concept of like the alchemical change in yourself is it's an allegory. But like, I guess it doesn't have to be an allegory, because it's the same principles that looks like it's just been carried over almost into I don't know what to call it, maybe an ideological viewpoint of this of bettering yourself. And it has a purpose, to use the word that you use. Science has a purpose. There's biology has a purpose. Physics has a separate purpose, right? You don't just come up with a science for no reason. You know, do you think that this, first of all, let me just back that up real quick and say, I think that the survival of that idea across time and into some of these secret groups of people like the Rosicrucians or the Templar or the Masons, I think it's just, again, evidence that these ideas go back way further than we realize. But it seems to me like you're talking about the resonance. You were discussing with these caves and some of these other temples in Egypt. Do you feel like this was a form of communication or tapping into communicating to beings and gaining like knowledge, which is again a concept through this hidden knowledge and Hermeticism, for example?
Yeah, I guess I do. And I think it was also about expanding the inward journey through meditation and expanding and deepening states of consciousness, which in of itself can be a trigger point for interactions with what we might call non-human intelligences. I have my own experiences of going out into my garden at night and projecting intentions for having a contact, and I had experiences. That's why I created Project Unity in the first place, was because I had experiences. So I think that there was a component of this. I had a really interesting conversation with a anesthesiologist and a quantum biologist called Dr. Stuart Hameroff, and he is the co-author of a theory alongside Sir Roger Penrose, very famous scientist, and their theory, which is called the Orchestrated Objective Reduction Theory, or ORC-OR, is about the brain and neurons in the brain, and specifically very tiny elements within the neurons in the brain called microtubules. Have you come across this? Inside the brain are these tiny helical structures called microtubules, and basically their hypothesis is that these microtubules are responsible for allowing our consciousness to interact on quantum levels, on an interactive state with the quantum field of information that is at the basement bedrock foundation level of reality, and that these microtubules are tiny enough to pick up on vibrations in quantum fields, very subtle perturbations in these, you know, very, very subtle fields that permeate through reality. And what I think is happening with a lot of these acoustic resonance temples is that they're essentially, because one of the elements of this hypothesis around the microtubules is that the quantum coherence. I'm not a physicist, so I'm like, you know, this is all coming from memory. The quantum coherence within these microtubules, when they're actually coherent and stabilized within a quantum field, is very fleeting, very fleeting. So the actual ability to expand that experience and keep the brain essentially in a quantum state for longer is something that's done through meditation, something that's done through psychedelic experiences, through near-death experiences. These things seem to excite the microtubules. And so I think that a lot of these acoustic structures that clearly were engineered to interact with brainwaves, because they do influence brainwaves and they promote the brain to move up into different bandwidths of frequency of thinking, very literally on a biophysical level, which can be read electromagnetically. I think that there is... Not that they understood this as a micro quantum biologist or anything like that, because I don't think that's really the case. I think it's more intuitive, spirit-based science that was then picked up on, and we're now looking at it with our incredible tools and going, whoa, hang on a second, like, how were they able to do that? But I think that what they might have been doing is like using these acoustic resonance complexes to elongate the expansion of the quantum coherence. All right. So the longer you're able to stay in this acoustic resonance complex, the longer you're able to bring your consciousness into these bandwidths and stay in this kind of elongated experience of a spiritual process. So I think that there's a component. I don't know if this explains all of it. But in terms of the acoustic engineering, especially in places like, for example, this temple in Malta, the Hypogeum of Halsefleni in Malta, which is just off the coast of Italy, really incredible place. And in fact, this is actually, it's a very small island, but it's got the largest concentration of megalithic stone building sites from the Stone Age in the world. It's littered with them. And the original settlers from Italy, from areas like Sicily, when they came over to Malta in the Bronze Age, they came and they found this island covered in temples, but no one living there. No one knows who constructed all of these weird temples on this island. Right. But there's one in particular called the Hypogeum, which is underground. It's this subterranean, incredible, multi-layered, geometrically crafted limestone temple, all out of the solid limestone bedrock, at a time before the wheel, at a time before bronze and copper tools. This is deep into the Neolithic. They date it to like 5000 BC, but that's because that's as far back as they can go. I'll go way further back. I'd say 10, 12, 15,000, you know, in terms of how ancient this site is. But it's acoustically profound. I mean, they've done studies on it. You can look it up. The Hypogeum. I'll send you some links if you want, where they've done a lot of studies on the acoustics. It resonates at exactly 111 hertz, which changes the brainwave into theta. And there are these elongated skulls that were found inside the Hypogeum. One of them is on display in the Museum of Valletta, the Museum of Archaeology in Valletta, which is the local city. And the interesting thing about these ones in particular, these skulls, is they actually lack the sagittal suture, which is the vertical crack that goes down the skull. That's from when we're being pushed through the birth canal and these two parts of the skull fuse together, the two parietal bones are fused together and you get this crack. Now, this is an adult skull. It's an adult skull, but it doesn't have the sagittal suture, which is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, you're going to die as a baby. Yeah. If you come out with that, you're going to die. And so it doesn't have that. Completely adult, fully formed skull without that. And it's elongated to quite a profound degree. And apparently hundreds of these elongated skulls were found inside the Hypogeum. It was discovered by a road worker who was literally chipping away at the road and boom, suddenly goes underground and finds this incredible subterranean labyrinth, acoustically tuned temple. Only 20% of it's available to the public. The rest of it's fully restricted. And they treat that place like a skiff. They took my phone, they took my electronics, they took everything off of you to prevent you from taking any photographs, any video, any audio recordings, nada. So they're very protective over it. And also, there's a lot of places around Valletta, not Valletta, around Malta, a lot of tourist sites, a lot of archaeological sites. They advertise them, you know, signs this way, 200 meters until you get there. There's no signs for the Hypogeum, which is objectively probably the most impressive site in all of Malta, because it's this incredible subterranean structure. And me and my girlfriend were walking around for hours trying to find it, like, where is this place?
Incredible multi-layered subterranean ancient facility. It's over 4,000 years old. Seems to demonstrate what we call psychoacoustic architecture, the kind of architecture that's deliberately engineered to influence sound. in specific ways which then influences the human brain.
And then we just went down this little side street, and it's like a white building with Hypogeum written in black. No photos of what it looks like inside, nothing. It's like they're really not trying to make it easy to find.
So we've arrived at the Hypogeum, and one thing that we've just kind of been commenting on is how hard it was to find. There's no signage for this place. It's literally just like down on this little alleyway. And there's no images of what it looks like inside. And I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but it almost feels like they're trying to put people off, or at least just make it seem like it's not that interesting. I mean, if you looked around here and you didn't know much about this this site, you'd just kind of assume that it's probably not that big of a deal, when it's actually probably the biggest deal on the island.
And so when it comes to the acoustics, I think that there was a spiritual component, an expansion of consciousness, and that bleeds down into, once we get it, get into like the empirical biophysics of it, is, you know, the potential elongation of quantum coherent processes in microtubules in neural networks. But that's kind of like, okay, well, did they know that, or is that just a consequence of the intuitive information they were working with? It's hard to know. I would argue for the latter.
Yeah, it's interesting when you talked about these microtubules. It reminds me of qubits in quantum computing. Like they have such a hard time with them maintaining the state that they're supposed to be in. And it sounds a lot like what you were saying with these microtubules, that you have to use this resonance. What you said, 111 hertz, it like prolongs that process for the brain. It's weird because it's still quantum computing, and the use of information, you know, entanglement on the other side of it, right? It kind of sounds like that as well, but using the human brain and like the download of information, it the quantum state, it sounds like, has a hard time for the human brain, or the way, however we're doing with quantum computing.
Well,
it's because
you, with a quantum computer, you have to keep it at incredibly low temperatures, low to get that coherence, to get that superposition and coherence. And so the argument against any sort of quantum coherence in the brain has always been that the brain is a wet, noisy, biological environment that is not going to help stabilize coherent quantum effects. But within the microtubules, there are apparently these like little, again, this is like, you know, trailing off into just on the edges of my knowledge base, but within the microtubules, there are like these chambers that have something called like hard water. It's a special form of water. It's a very strange, stabilized, completely chemically different form of water. And they think that this is actually what's responsible for creating a unique environment within the microtubules that allows for coherence to take place. So there's a lot of elements, these microtubules, that almost feel like they're insulators from the wet, noisy, loud biological environment that is completely contradictory to quantum effects. They're a very different element of the body deep down on the microcellular level. And, you know, this is stuff that we're only just starting to tap into and try and figure out. But I think it does speak volumes to potentially evidencing psychic effects, you know, psi abilities. There are things in the brain that, if we can empirically prove, interact with quantum fields, then you're essentially proving non-locality in consciousness. Because if consciousness can interact quantumly, then it can interact with all quantum elements at once.
Exactly.
Because quantum affects that way, right? That's how quantum works. Yeah.